that?
No, I want to see.
Oh.
Hi, good morning, everybody, and I'm Carol, and I am an alcoholic. It's good to be here this morning and share about my experience, strength, and hope. And I've had the honor of living in four different places throughout my sobriety, and I've had four different sponsors and one different sponsor in each area. And gathering that woman's experience has helped me come up with working step 10 and all the other steps that is comfortable for me and that works for me and that has definitely changed my life and produced the psychic change necessary for me to stay sober today and to want to share it with others, go to meetings, suit up and show up and all throughout my life. And the step 10, I think, has helped me. Even though it's like four paragraphs on pages 84 and 85, some, like some of the other steps, there is so much more than just those four paragraphs. And my experience has been that all of those sentences in those in the big book, I have worked them at some time throughout my sobriety, not just when I was working that particular step. And so continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. It was brought to my attention that there are two parts of that step. Taking personal inventory throughout the day and throughout going back into my past and also developing ways to have new tools to deal with everyday life. And the second part is when we were wrong, promptly admitted it, and that totally helps me in all my personal relationships with my husband, with my coworkers, with my friends. I get to tell them when I'm wrong and offer a solution and definitely let them know that that behavior will not be repeated. And the only way I cannot repeat my old behavior is through working with my higher power. And I know that the 10th step prayer is, the short version is, thy will be done. And the big book talks about how can I best serve thee, thy will not mine be done. Because it talks about entering the world of the spirit, and to me that's a spiritual experience. And I look to my higher power throughout the day, especially when I'm doing a spot check inventory to see what my behavior is, what my thinking is, what my motives are for whatever I'm doing. This step definitely helped me to stay sober and then grow an understanding of the 12 steps and its effectiveness. The set-aside prayer is another prayer that I use whenever I work the steps because it reminds me to forget everything I think I know about working the steps and to be open to whatever interpretation is presented to me, either by a sponsee or sharing, heard in a meeting or through my higher power, because I hear my higher power through you. So if I forget what I think I know, I'm so much better off because my head is like this circus that is like going 24 hours a day, but while I'm awake, it's going. And I try to put that aside when I work the steps. And I love the moment of silence that we use before the serenity prayer because it gets me to clear my head. I was told that this step is, along with the other ones, continue for my lifetime and that I need to make it a regular habit. So I have also been given three words to use from my sponsor in Orange County, and it was uncover, discover, and discard. And Chuck C. uses that in his book, A New Pair of Glasses, and it's really simple. And for somebody like me, having three words to use, uncover, discover, discard, is huge. Because I can go throughout the day and go, why am I feeling uncomfortable? What are my motives for why did I act like that? And usually, it always is either anger, resentment, jealousy, fear, self-pity, hurt pride, which is big for me. I get my feelings hurt very easy. I'm very sensitive. And I think a lot of us are pretty sensitive. I can get hurt by something someone says to me. I can get hurt by the way somebody looks at me. I mean, and it's just a way for me to let those things go and move forward. When I have those feelings come up to me throughout the day, I can ask God to remove them immediately and call my sponsor, call a woman in Alcoholics Anonymous and tell her what's going on. And my experience with that is whenever I call a woman in the program and tell her exactly what I'm doing, she usually laughs because it's totally ridiculous. Because when I say it out loud and I say the words, they're like, what? And I'm like, oh, yeah, that's kind of crazy. So I get to share my feelings and my thoughts with you. And before I got sober, all those thoughts were stuck in my head. And it just made me more insane because I kept repeating the same behavior over and over again, expecting different results. If I ask God to remove them, usually I will say, God, can you remove this for me for the next 5 seconds? And it works. It really does. I always don't have that opportunity to call somebody in those when whatever happens, like if I'm at work. So I need to put it away and call my sponsor or call another woman in the program right away. There's 4 different inventories for me. There's the spot check inventory that I just talked about. It's like if something happens at work, I can know right away the red flag goes up. Something's wrong with the way I'm acting. And that's working through that process. There's the day end inventory of going throughout what did I do today that was a credit, what was a liability, and what was my motive for acting the way I did. My favorite one is the progress inventory, and I call it my more will be revealed inventory. And when I was about 10 years sober, I had remembered things that I'd forgotten when I did my first set of steps when I got sober. And so my sponsor had me just go through another 4 steps and do the 4 columns and meet with her. I remember we went to the beach and you know, the neat thing about doing an inventory with a sponsor is you remember exactly where you were, you remember exactly what she told you, and you can remember how you felt relief at the end of it. That's been my experience. And I know there's another, a 4th type of inventory, which is they call it like a retreat or something, like Sister B would be a retreat or a way to be introspective and to clear my head and to see how I can improve on the way I feel and the way I act and the way I am with other people. The promise of the 10th step, I think, is that we get to develop a 6th sense, and that's God consciousness. When I was in Riverside, my Saturday night home group, we used to leave a chair empty during the meeting, and we always said that's our higher power's chair. And so whenever I'm in a meeting like today, I can just picture my higher power sitting here with us. I'm God conscious in the way that I know that my higher power has a big sense of humor, huge sense of humor about me, and he always laughs when I tell him my plans. And I can feel that presence with me throughout the day. The most talked about thing in step 10 is the spiritual axiom part, that whenever and every time it says we are disturbed, no matter what the cause, there's something wrong with us. And when I first read that, I was shocked. I was like, oh, no, it's those people. But the promise to me of working the 10th step is that I get to avoid things like justified anger. And the book says that we should leave those things to people more qualified. I don't know who those people are, but I do not need to walk around justifying my anger. I need to talk to someone about it and let it go. Usually that's what needs to happen. Or I need to change my behavior. I need to make amends quickly. Restraint of tongue and pen is one of my other favorites in step 10. I do not criticize people to their face. I don't immediately tell them that they're wrong anymore. I'm able to talk it over. If I need to tell that person something, I get to talk it over with somebody else. So I don't immediately say what I'm thinking. I have like a break in there. And I think for me, I'm just leaving the most important thing to me for last, and it's that I have a daily reprieve from my disease. It's Saturday, and it's 9:45, and I get to be in Saturday at 9:45. And that's a big promise of the 10th step, because I'm current with my higher power, and I get to stand here today, and I hope that I said something that might just be something for one person in this room. Like I said, I've been honored to work with different women in this program in different counties of California, and they've all given me gifts. And a friend of mine recently shared, or last year, she always told me that the gift is yours. So if you get to work the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, the gift is yours. And that is all I have today about step 10, and I'm off.
Wonderful. Thank you, Carol. And if there's anyone who has specific questions for Carol right now, we can entertain those now, or you're also welcome to write them down on a card or put them in the Ask a Basket, and we'll address that later. Do you have a question now?
Yeah.
Okay, let's do that. And
let's do that. Have you used that?
Good morning, Carol.
Good morning, Eric.
Good morning. Hey, how long have you been speaking, like, openly, like this? You know what I mean, like...
I usually, when somebody asks me to do something, I'll call it some out of this, I say yes.
Cool.
I love what the speaker said at the picnic last week at the Central Office picnic. He said, if anybody asks you to do anything in Alcoholics Anonymous and you feel it's inconvenient to you, then you need to do it. Because it's like my head is like, oh my gosh, what am I going to say? I don't know anything. And I instantly go to that place. But it doesn't matter. God's in charge. And I just say yes to whenever I'm asked to be a service. And that's the first part of my recovery.
That's cool. So, I mean, you look very comfortable up there. And it's really cool. Yeah. My other question was, it's like, if you had something, or if I had something in my mind that I feel I want to do, you know, and I don't feel it's bad, you know, and I think it's my sponsor, and he tells me or suggests to me, you know, something that is like against the way I want or I wish it would go. What's the best way of handling that?
Do you mean you ask your sponsor to help you think things through a specific topic?
Let me give you an example.
Okay.
It's getting near my time to leave time.
Right.
And I'm feeling like, you know, yeah, I'm ready to make that step. Partially. I mean, I've got a fight going on between here and here, you know, and I know that I'm ready to go out, get the job, and get back on my feet. And he's suggesting, hey, slow your roll, you know, another 30 days with her, another 60 days, and I'm thinking like, hey, buddy, you're on the outside, you know, and you got the job and everything, and I'm thinking like, hey, you know, I'm ready to, or I'm wanting to, you know, get out there in the workforce and start pulling my weight and start coming up. And he's like, well, you're old. And I know he's not wrong, but he's not saying what I want to hear.
I totally understand that. I to take suggestion in here, even when I didn't think it was the right thing to do. I have had many suggestions given to me throughout my sobriety, and I take that opportunity to listen to them and usually follow through with what the suggestion is. That's been my experience with it, and the thing about Alcoholics Anonymous is that today I have all the things that I always wanted to have in my life, and they came through Alcoholics Anonymous, and they didn't come through me in my head. They came through other people, they came through my heart power, and especially the women that sponsored me. And my experience shows that I took their suggestion and just went with it. I hope that answers your question.
I'm having trouble getting out of old behaviors because I'm used to making my own money, you know, maybe not a lot of it, but in my addiction, I'm used to making a substantial amount, but blowing twice as much, you know. It's like, you know, even at the end of the day, I may have 250 in my pocket, but the agenda for tomorrow is going to say, well, it's going to take $250 to pick up this quarter ounce, to make my, you know, the crew happy, and then what's going to happen, you know, and then boom, I need to fix me before I fix anybody else. You know, and so I'm hearing what you're saying, and I'm lowering my rules, and I'm glad to be here.
And I wanted to just, when you talk about, like, thinking about tomorrow, is that a big deal for me in this program is one day at a time. You know, things could totally be different tomorrow. And God doesn't ask me to take it 1 week at a time. He asked me to take it one day at a time. So I rest better in that than a friend of mine used to say, I like to memorize the future. And that's what I love to do. I like to think of where I'm going to be next month, where I'm going to be next year. And so that's really dangerous for me. And it, I need to, when I start thinking like that, to remember it one day at a time. And so that helps me. Let me do that.
Thank you.
Thanks,
sir. Thank you. You still have quite an opportunity to ask questions with our box in the back. So feel free to do that. You guys know what's next? I get to invite Jack to come up and share his experience. Yeah, come on, Jack.
Morning, everybody.
Good morning,
Jack. I'm Maytag Jack, and I'm an alcoholic.
No.
Wow, you know, Carol pretty much covered it, really, right down to the T. Pretty much everything I'm going to say is going to sound like a repeat of Carol. I got sober October 28th, 1990. When I got to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, they told me one of the first things I needed to do was to seek out a sponsor to guide me through the steps. And I'm going to talk a little bit about that before I tell you about the 10th step, because I can't tell you about the 10th step if I don't tell you about my sponsors and how they taught me to do it. And that's what I'm here for today. They told me to go to meetings and to listen to the people sharing. And they told me to look for somebody sharing whose story sounded like a repeat of mine. Somebody who sounded like their life, when they're telling their life story at the podium, they're telling my life story. Somebody that I identified with. Somebody that seemed a lot like me. And in the course of my early recovery, I had the privilege of being in a meeting and hearing a guy introduce himself as Rick R., the garbage pail kid. And what that meant to me was he was saying he did just about everything under the sun to enhance his fun, including alcohol, but alcohol being the drug of choice. And that was me. I did a lot of things other than alcohol, but alcohol was always my drug of choice, and specifically Bacardi Rum 151 was my drug of choice. So I listened to this guy, and I heard his story, and I decided that this was the guy that I wanted for my sponsor. So I cornered him after a meeting and told him about myself. This is what I was taught to do. I was told that when you find a person you want to be your sponsor, go to that person, ask him if he's got a minute to talk, and then tell him your story if he's willing to listen. And tell him that you want him to be your sponsor and ask him to do that. So I did. I cornered this guy and I told him my story. And I told him that I was an alcoholic, that I knew I was an alcoholic, and that I was going to get drunk again if I didn't get into this program and work these steps and get some help. And probably was going to get drunk again anyways. And he agreed to be my sponsor. And he walked me through the steps. He was my sponsor through the first 7 steps. And then, like, life, things changed. And Rick was gone, and I didn't have him anymore. And I didn't have a sponsor, but I had a backup. See, in the process of looking for a sponsor, I had picked out 2, just in case the first one turned me down, and the second one was still around, and his name was Ron. Ron L. And when I lost Rick as a sponsor, I went to Ron and asked Ron to take up where Rick left off, and he said no. He said, I won't take off where Rick left off. He said, but I will be your sponsor, and we'll start fresh today. And we went through it again. And he became my sponsor. And he walked me through the first 7 steps again, covering what Rick had covered. And then he walked me through the 8th and 9th, and we began the 10th. Both my sponsors were real pointed about things. They gave advice, like Eric was asking about. They gave me instructions to go in a direction that my mind said I didn't want to go. And I conflicted with that. But I did what they told me because I wanted to stay sober. And when we got through the 9 steps and we started the 10th step, my sponsor Ron told me that the 10th step is what Carol talked about. It's 4 parts. And the first part, he said, you should have already been doing. In fact, you have been doing it. I've been having you do it and you didn't know it. He said, the first part is a spot check inventory you do daily. At any time of day, at any given moment of the day. When somebody irritates you, gives you resentment, pisses you off, you stop and you do an inventory. You check out what just happened. How does it make me feel? Where am I going with it? And what am I likely to do? And if it's real troublesome, you call your sponsor and you work it out. Because an alcoholic like me will get drunk in a minute. I don't get drunk in a day or a week or a month. I get drunk in a minute. It just takes that one time. When my guard is down, this is what my sponsor taught me, and I'm gone. And I'm off and I'm running. So anytime any kind of resentment flares up, you got to call your sponsor, he told me. You got to do an inventory on it, and you got to deal with it immediately. That's the spot check inventory. You don't have to wait all the way to step 10 to start it. He said, somebody should have told you about it way back at step 1 when you were in Pine. You know, I was in Pine and I had a conflict with a guy in Pine. We made a deal. He was a young kid. He was 17. And he wanted to go to this speaker meeting with his girlfriend. But he had coffee bar. And there was a meeting after that meeting that I wanted to go to, but I had house duties that I had to do that kept me from going to it. So he said, well, you know what, if you do the coffee bar for me so I can go with my girlfriend, I'll do your cleaning up at night so you can go to that one. I said, okay, we made that deal. So he left and went with his girlfriend and I ran the coffee bar. And that meeting was over and he didn't come back. And all the guys are back from the speaker meeting, and they're there in the house, and it's time to do that other chore, and I want to go to my meeting, but he's not there to do the chore, so I got to stay and do it. I do the chore, get everything done, the other meeting ends, and boom, he shows back up. He decided to go to both of them with his girlfriend, and I didn't get to go to any. And I was pissed. I was mad and I wanted to hurt something. See, I don't know about you guys, but I'm a snapper. You know what a snapper is? A snapper is a guy who, you can push his buttons for a month and he won't do nothing. You can push him for 3 months and he won't do nothing. And then one day you can push him for a second and he explodes. And you never know what's going to happen. Neither does he. That's me. Yeah, I let it all sit inside. I don't work a step. I don't do an inventory. I don't do a spot check inventory. I don't do a daily inventory. I don't do any of that. I just let it sit in there and fester. Close it off in the back of my head. Till I run into that one person who pushed that button one more time. And there's no room to store it. And I snap and let it all out on him. I did that in Hawaii. put a guy in a hospital for 6 months. And he only hit me once. I did that in Barstow. I was an E5, and the first sergeant chewed me out for about 20 minutes. And when he got done, I chewed him out for 40. Because I'm a snapper. So I got this sponsor, and he's telling me, you got to do a spot check inventory anytime something pops up. So I do. And what ended up happening was I ended up having to call my sponsor pretty regular for a while. It seemed like every day, two or three times a day, I was calling my sponsor because somebody was making me mad about something. Something I didn't agree with, or telling me some direction I didn't want to go that I thought was wrong. Like my thinking was all that good, it got me here. And things started to change. And then my sponsor, Ronnie, says, you know, we're going to do this now. The 10th step, you're going to do a daily inventory at night. You're going to sit down at night quietly in your house. And I was living with guys in recovery, four guys in recovery, so it was pretty easy to do. Because at night, we all kind of tend to go our own way anyways. You sit down and review the day. Work back in your memory and review the day. And think about areas where you had a problem, where things bothered you. And write it down. And if there's something really stressful, call me and we'll talk about it. So I would call him at night and we'd talk about the things that went on in my day. We didn't focus so much on what was good in the beginning. We worked on the issues that were real important. The things that caused me resentments. The things that caused me anger. The things that caused me to isolate and shut down from everybody and everything and want to go off in my own direction where my mind gets me dead. That's what we worked on pretty much a daily basis, Ron and I. And after a while, it kind of calmed down and it started to be once every 2 or 3 days we'd have to work on that stuff. And he also told me that we're going to do a thing, I don't know what you call it. The 12 book describes it a little bit. The 12 by 12 talks about it. It's the third phase to the 10th step, which is where at the end of each month, I would write down all the things that we had been working on, all the things that we had covered, the resentments, the spot check inventories, the daily inventories. And then we would sit down and talk about them and see how I was doing in the area of change. Because you see, the purpose of the 10 step inventory is to change our behaviors. It's kind of like going to school to be to have some kind of occupation and then not doing that occupation. There would be no point in the 10 step if you don't know what you're getting out of it. So at the end of the month, we would go over all the things that I had been doing. You call them shortcomings, defects of character, whatever you want, that you have in your personal traits, your personality that affects you adversely. And you're working on changing them. See, I would get angry and blow up. Or I would get angry and shut down. And not talk to people about it. Not talk to my sponsor. And I would be mean. Not mean like outwards towards you, but like mad, mean, just feel terrible inside. Upset. Want to lash out at something and not know who I wanted to lash out at or why. And I worked this step with my sponsor and change happened. You know, I don't blow up. I'm not a snapper anymore. We worked these 10 steps. We worked this 10th step and I became peaceful. I became serene. I started having some happiness in my life. And it started changing things. You know, when I was the snapper, I affected a certain group of people or attracted a certain group of people. When I stopped being the snapper, started working on this and started finding some serenity, I started finding a different group of people to hang with. And some of the old people started changing too. You know, I came in this program and I was in here with Albert and Abraham and Gil Contreras and a bunch of guys, and they were like me. And we didn't like each other. And that inventory helped each of us change. And we became friends and brothers in recovery. And we all got peaceful and happy and started having a life that is the kind of life we always wanted to begin with and never knew how to get. So now today, 22 years later, in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, when I work with a sponsee, that's what I do with him. When we get to the 10th step, I walk him through the three phases I just told you of. And then there's one more. Carol was talking about that too. It's called an annual inventory. And I have only a few sponsees that I've kept long enough to do it with, but we do an annual inventory of everything we've done throughout the year. And I get a real good look. When I do my annual inventory with my sponsor, and my sponsees get a real good look of just how much this program has changed me and has improved my life and has led me in a better direction. And I get just a little bit stronger desire each year to go a little bit further. That's what I know about the 10th step, and that's what I have to share with you today. Thanks, Jack, and I'm an alcoholic.
My name's Albert, and I'm an alcoholic. And I'm a proud member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm also a proud product of Pine Recovery because that's where I got sober 23 years ago. And it's only because of the grace of God and the people that were here before me that I've been able to stay sober since then, you know. Like Jack, I got to tell you a little bit about myself so you can also have an understanding of how the 10th step played an important role in my recovery. Most of you know my story, man. I'm an ex-convict. I'm a three-time loser to the state. And I had a very violent jacket in the past. And I only knew two emotions growing up, man. I knew rage and anger, you know. And for a lot of years, man, I did a lot of things that I'm not proud of, you know. But because of the 10th step, and by taking them inventories and asking God for forgiveness, those things I'm no longer ashamed of either, you know what I mean? But I tell you what, man, I learned that I would get angry real easy. I would get angry real easy, man, and I would become violent. And because of that, you know, I've been doing a lot of time before I got sober. Started doing time when I was a kid, man. You know, I was the fourth youngest person in Preston. I did a year and a half in CYA when I was a youngster because I lashed out. You know, I lashed out and I hurt somebody, man, pretty bad. And I did things to people that I had no right to do, you know. And it's not only cost me my sanity, but it's cost me my freedom. I'm not talking about that freedom from being released or being able to walk the streets, that freedom from being able to be myself, because for a lot of years I didn't know who that was. And for a lot of years, man, I had wasted so much time trying to be somebody that I wasn't. Jack talked about sponsorship. And if it wasn't for sponsorship, I would have not had an understanding of what this program's all about and how important those steps are to me and my recovery. They got that fourth edition of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous floating around right now. And I got sober in the third edition. In the third edition of Alcoholics Anonymous, there was a story in the back of the book about a five-time loser, man. And he talked about how he always or nearly always had those good intentions. But once he'd get out, all those good intentions were gone, man. And I'm not a five-time loser, but I'm a three-time loser. You know, I did a year and a half in CYA when I was a youngster, and I lost twice to the state as an adult. I did a lot of little county time in between, you know what I mean? But he talked about that. And I remember thinking when I got out how it was going to be different. Or how when I got out, I was going to do this or I was going to stop doing that. And every time I would get out and I'd get slapped in the hand with that $200 gate money and some change, I would run right to the rodeo right there in Cutler and I'd go get a bottle of Thunderbird and I'd run across the street to the Connections and score. And I caught myself doing the same thing all the time. And I never understood why, you know. I got to tell you, when I got sober, and John Maytag, Jack, talked about Ron L. And Ron L., he used to say that, my name's Ron and I'm an alcoholic and I didn't, you know, tiptoe into the rooms of AA to improve my already wonderful life. And that was his pitch. You know, and I had to think about a lot of stuff, you know, because I was one of those people that some people said came here for all the wrong reasons. They said that you have to do it for yourself. You can't do it for anybody else. You know, and, you know, what I've learned from myself is that there was no wrong reason for me being here. I didn't come here for all the wrong reasons. My higher power sent me here for whatever his reasons were, not mine. See, I came here to get my family to drop the restraining orders against me. I came here so my parole officer wouldn't violate me. I came here so that Judge Kim wouldn't slap that other charge on me. You know, I came here for what some people said 23 years ago were all the wrong reasons. Well, what I've learned by taking these inventories is that there is no wrong reason. It was the reasons that I chose in life that got me here. It's what happened to me since I've been here. I met a guy named Francis. He was from Australia. Maytag probably remembers him. You know, and Francis said that he only knew two prayers. And in the morning when he'd open his eyes and his head was on his pillow, he would look up to the ceiling and he would say to his higher power, God, whatever. And then he would start his day, man. And he would go throughout the day. And at the end of the day, he would lay on his rack, put his head on his pillow, stare at the ceiling. And right before his day would end, he would say, God, enough, and go to sleep. And I kind of, that's the way my life was, man, for a lot of years. It's like I'd get up and whatever happened, happened, man. It's like whatever, you know. And at the end of the day, that's kind of the way I looked at life. (clears throat) 23 years sober, and that 10-step still plays an important part in my life today. As a matter of fact, I owe Bill an amends right now because this is a guy, he's my AA brother and he's my April brother, and he has prepared in advance because this guy's organized and he takes sponsorship and he takes the program of recovery and service seriously, because it's important to him, and it should be important to me. And last night, see, now this is the old dopamine in me. See, I can already think of all kinds of excuses why I owe my brother an amends, you know, but the reality is there is no excuse, man. See, because this 10-step really sucks, and I'm going to tell you why. Because, see, back in the day, man, back in the day, I could blame everybody, man. I could blame, you know, my abusive grandmother. I can blame my drug addict, you know, abusive father. I could blame my barfly mother. I could blame my worthless, incompetent social worker. I could blame anybody that I wanted for all my wrongdoings. And see, what sucks, man, is that today I can't blame anyone for my mistakes. You see, I can't do that. And Bill had called me a week ago, man, and asked me to make a commitment to a program that saved my life. And I said, yeah. You see, and back in the day, if you asked me to do something, you could pretty much count on it that I wasn't going to do it. And you know, and that sucks, man, because that's who I was. But that's not who I am. And it doesn't matter how long I've been sober, sometimes I can forget where I've come from. And sometimes I can forget my responsibilities and my commitment. Because I was taught 23 years ago, see, and Steve and I and Maytag, we talk about this. Because my brother Abraham, my friend, we were talking a few weeks ago, and we were talking about AA, you know. And he had mentioned about old school AA. And then we see a lot of this new school AA wannabes. And then we see some of these people with no school, you know. And it's like the blind leading the blind, man. You see? And what I learned a long time ago, man, is that if it isn't broke, don't fix it. There's no room for new school in AA. Because old school saved my life. I am old school, man. That's the bottom line. I was born and raised old school, and I am old school, and I'm going to die old school. And I thank God for old school AA. Because it was the people that grounded this program, that had worked these steps thoroughly, that saw someone in me that I didn't even know existed within myself. And these people put me in check. When back in the day, CDC couldn't even put me in check. My parole officer couldn't put me in check. Judges didn't scare me. My brother Carlos got killed in the joint. My mom saw four of her kids go before her. You know, not a whole lot scared me back then. I don't know if I wasn't scared or I was just stupid. I think it was both. You know, stupidly scared. You know? And Bill had asked me to come and do a spiel on step 10. And I said, sure, bro, no problem. Last night I went to that Midnight Star concert, Lowrider Car Show over there in Dinuba. You know, the hopping contest and all that. Well, I grew up listening to Midnight Star, you know, that no parking on the dance floor and all that. And I grew up on that. Now, like I said, I'm old school. And I took my daughter to this concert last night because she listens to this music today that to me makes no sense. I wanted her to go hear some real music, you know what I mean? And so we went last night and we kicked it, man. We had a good time, you know, and I didn't get home till after midnight, you know, and I was tired. And I forgot about today. And thank God that Bill's responsible because I'm not. He called and said, hey, you still coming? Oh, yeah. I'll be there, bro.
I'm on my way.
Yeah. You know, and that's wrong of me. Because Bill and like many others in the 23 years that I've been sober have been there for me. And sometimes I need to be reminded of that. You know, I need to remember that when I was in need, AA was there for me. And it's my responsibility to be there for you. You see, and Danny Trejo says that the spiritual part of the program is, thou shalt not forget where thou comest from. And last night, I forgot where I came from at that Midnight Star concert, man, you know what I mean? Or at least I was reminded of where I was. But the good thing is there was a bunch of us sober people there hanging out. I mean, there was people there drinking. They do that too. But I don't belong there. You know, and thank God that there's a lot of sober people that still go to functions like I do. I was raised on car shows and Chevys, you know what I mean? And that's just the way it is. So I got to say to you, Bill, man, first of all, that I love you and I'm sorry that I totally forgot about this morning, man. So thank you for reminding me. You know that... when wrong, admit it. And I love what Jack said. But I had to learn for myself that the whole purpose of the 10th step wasn't just to go back and reflect on how my day went. See, what I had to learn on that 10th step is that what part did I play? You see, it's not what you do that upsets me. Because you're going to be you. And at the risk of sounding cliche-ish, one of our cliches is live and let live. You see? And when you're bothering me, it's not you. It means that there's something going on with me. That's what I gotta look at. You see? What part did I play? Did it need to be said? did it need to be said by me? Did it need to be said by me right now? No, it didn't. But sometimes I do. You see, and I got to remember that, man. I got to remember that, like Jack said in his pitch, you see, it was me that got me here. I don't know a whole lot, man. I really don't. You know, if I knew so much, I wouldn't be in these rooms. You see, I thought I knew everything, man. I thought I was bulletproof. I thought nobody could touch me, man. I've been stabbed. I've been shot at. My teeth have been kicked out. My nose has been busted 3 times. I served 3 state sentences, man. 1 as a youngster and 2 as an adult. And I come from a family of violence, man. I come from a family of... Some of my families died in prison. You know? And had some pretty violent deaths. And sometimes I forget to be grateful that I'm even alive. And that's not easy for somebody like me. You see? I remember one time, there was this lady named Sylvia from Fresno. We were at a meeting in Kingsburg. After the meeting, man, a bunch of us shot over to Denny's afterwards for what they used to have back in the day. They called meetings after the meetings. And those were some of the best ones, man, because they were real. They were intimate. And we talked about how we felt and what was going on in our lives and how we were scared and didn't want to screw up. And I remember we were kicking there, man. There was a bunch of us. And this one broad looked at Sylvia and says, you know, yeah, I signed up for college. I'm going to go to Reedley College. And Sylvia says, that's good. That's good. I'm proud of you. She said, no, you don't understand, Sylvia. I'm scared. And I'm terrified. I'm an old washed up dope fiend. And I'm going to be walking to campus with a bunch of fresh out of high school intelligent little suckers, man. And they're going to get on my nerves because I'm stupid. And she says, no, you're not stupid. And she goes, well, why are you scared? You should have been scared when you were out there turning tricks for nickel bags, jumping in cars with strangers. That's when you should have been scared. And right now you're doing something to better yourself, to educate your life, and the most dangerous person on the face of the earth is an educated dope fiend. You know what I mean? And you shouldn't be scared of that. And I had to think about that. I had survived. Well, to be honest with you, God has kept me alive through some pretty tough environments, man, to where a couple of times, that's not even counting the times that I OD'd or drove in a blackout, but He seemed fit to keep me alive when several times I tried to get me killed. And I'm walking into a room of AA and I'm embarrassed and I don't want to be seen there. And I'm walking to a meeting with a group of pine like a herd of cattle because we got to go to these meetings every day, twice a day, 3 on Friday, and I'm meeting out. You know what I mean? And I'm embarrassed and I don't want to be seen. You see, when I should have been embarrassed, man, is when I was out there running amok. When I was out there drunk, belligerent, acting stupid. When my mom's health wasn't the best and she was dying and I was in and out of jail and prison. That's when I should have been embarrassed. And I wasn't. And then I'm embarrassed to come into a room to get help and say I'm a proud member of Alcoholics Anonymous. But I'm a proud product of Pine Recovery because it saved my life. You know? I got to continue to take those inventories. And you know what? It don't matter how long I'm sober, man. And I know people that have been around a while, they get offended when I say this. And then they can take their own inventory if they get offended. But Lawrence A. taught me a long time ago, it's not about time. It doesn't matter how much time. He said, his dog had time and still barked at the mailman. You know what I mean? He said, it's about recovery. It's about recovery. Because 23 years sober, and I was irresponsible today. You see, Now I'm still going to go back to that car show and see that hopping contest, but I got to get my recovery first, because I made a commitment for my brother over there. And see, I don't want to be that person that you couldn't count on anymore. Because they say that this program is based on attraction, not promotion. It's not what people said in these rooms that impressed me, because I'm not impressed by people. It's what they did that attracted me. And I wanted what they had. You see, and you people that are new, or any of you that are, you see, you deserve the same that I got when I got here. And it's my responsibility as a member of AA, well, as a proud member of AA, to see to it that you get it. Because it would be wrong for me to learn everything that these old-timers or the people that were here before me taught me, grounded me, and instilled in me that old-school AA, and to not come back and carry that message to the people that are just coming here today. You see, and I got to take those inventories. Steve and I talk a lot. Sometimes too much. You know what I mean? He probably gets tired of me, man. You know, and but he tolerates me, and that makes me even love him more. Because we talk about life. It's not how long we've been sober. It's what we've done since we've been sober. You see, and that's what it's all about. And because life goes on, and because I've changed, but sometimes those feelings are still there, and sometimes they still come up, and sometimes I get scared. See, and that's what I've learned by taking those inventories. A lot of the reasons why I did a lot of the things I did is because I was scared. You know that old saying that do unto others as you would want them to do unto you? See, I grew up on a different model. I grew up on that do unto others before they do unto you. You know what I mean? And that's not what it is, man. That's not what it's about. You know? And I got to stay grounded. That's why every time I see my brother Maytag, we always talk. You know, we always ask each other what's going on in our lives. You know, Steve can be over there in Washington or Albuquerque, New Mexico. And I call him anyways, man. You know, because sometimes I need to talk, and I'd rather call you at 9 p.m. or 11 p.m. and talk than to do what Jack said, hold it in, hold it in, hold it in, and one day just let it all out, because that's what I don't want to do. Yeah, I like to kick back, and I like to reflect, and I like to look at how my day went. You see. But if I want to get through this, I can't focus so much on how my day went. I have to focus more on what part did I play, and how could I have handled it differently. Maybe not so much in what I said, but maybe more importantly, how I could have said it. You know, I'm one of those people, man, that I'm not a very sympathetic person. I very rarely feel sorry for people. It's just not in my nature. I don't do it very well. But I'm probably one of the most empathetic people you'll ever meet. You see, because I learned the difference between sympathy and empathy. And those people that felt sorry for me, I fed on their vulnerability. And I took advantage of them, and I'd chew them up and spit them out. And if they served no purpose, I didn't need them in my life. They were a waste of time. But when I walked into these rooms 23 years ago, people didn't feel sorry for me. They had no sympathy for me whatsoever. But what they gave me was a lot of empathy, because they had been where I'd been and got out of what I needed to get out of and stayed out of. And they showed me how to do what they did. I know all about empathy. I know exactly what it is that most of you are going through. But I also know what's important and what you're going to have to learn to do if it's out that you want. And they mean what they say, if you want what we have, and you're going to have to do what we've done. Alcoholics Anonymous is an awesome program. I wouldn't be here 23 years and some change sober if it wasn't. It's an awesome program, not just because it saved my life. 7 months after I came in, my sister came in. They diagnosed my sister. He used to have a crush on her, remember? But, you know, I've seen what this program has done to people, and that's nice. But I've experienced what it's done to mine, and that is awesome. And I wouldn't trade that for anything in the world. Thank you, and God bless you.
Love that guy. Thank you, Albert. Again, if there's any specific questions you want to address to Albert, we can do that now, or please feel free to fill out one of the cards and put it on our Ask a Basket, and we'll... Yes, sir. Tell you what, let me... got a question for you.
Hey. Testing.
Hey, I was just informed that I'd better go back to the kitchen, but I want to thank the panel for taking their time for helping me. You know, I'm working with stuff that's sort of everything, stuff that maybe you don't want to work. I don't have it, like words to say. It was my own sticking finger that put me here, but thank you for taking your time.
Putting your priorities in there, A last and not putting it first, you know, it helped me reflect a lot of my problems.